I don't know if you've noticed this before or not, but there's a tendency in our human nature to let things that are extraordinary eventually become things that are ordinary. Okay, so something that was maybe spectacular or amazing to us at one point through familiarity or through repeated exposure eventually becomes something ordinary to us, something commonplace, something that we might take for granted or just simply approach more casually than maybe we used to. So a good example of this, a prime example of this, would be modern air travel, flying. I mean, for centuries, I mean, for millennia, right? Like, it's been mankind's dream to fly. And it's not a shock to you all, is it, that 100 years ago that became a reality? Like, we could fly. The Wright brothers took their first flight, and air commercial airliners started to offer flights, get this, overnight to Hawaii, overnight to London. Can you believe it? I watched some of those old commercials this week. And I kind of chuckled because, we just assume that that's a thing, that that's possible, right? That's everyday life for us. I kind of chuckle sometimes when I get on an airplane these days and there's, you know, people have their hoodies up and headphones on and their blinds shut on the window. And there's people that have gone before us in the centuries before us who would give their right arm to sit in one of our crummy economy class seats. And eat those economy class pretzels. What was extraordinary is now ordinary. And I'm afraid that the same thing is or can be true when it comes to the cross as well. Because crosses are everywhere. They're all around us. They're our jewelry, right? We wear them on our ears and in our necks. And we get tattoos of them, right? There's one right here. I think we got four more outside on the building. There's one on every green hill, high hill in the countryside. And that familiarity, that overexposure maybe can sort of cause the cross to lose its significance in our lives. And maybe for those of us who grew up around it, we never really understand just how extraordinary that it really is. And so tonight I want to invite you to resist approaching the cross casually tonight. A little less casually, maybe. Maybe for the first time or for the first time in a long time, to really settle into a heart of worship and just behold who Jesus is and what he has done for you on the cross. In John chapter 1, John the Baptist was neck deep in ministry, baptizing people out in the Jordan River, right? And these, everybody's wanting to know more about John. Who's John? John this, John that. The delegation from Jerusalem comes all the way out to him and says, "Who are you? Are you Elijah? Are you the prophet? Are you the Messiah? Are you the Christ?" And he denies every one of them. And he's almost kind of annoyed by it because he's just the guy that wants to point to the other guy. He doesn't want all the attention. He doesn't want the distraction on him. He wants people to recognize and behold Jesus. In fact, so much so that he says that there is somebody standing among you in the crowd that is so great that I'm not even worthy to untie his sandals. I'm not even worthy to be his slave. And yet, he is standing among you and you don't recognize him. You don't know him. The next day after that episode, he sees Jesus coming to him and he said, "Behold the Lamb of God." I feel like I have to hold my hand up for that. Behold. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Exclamation point. Did they get it? Did they understand it? Behold, the next day, behold, Jesus is coming again and he says, "Behold, the Lamb of God." We don't use that word behold in our vernacular, right? We don't use it every day. I bet you haven't used it this year. But we might say, look, look, look at that exclamation point. It's more than a command, and it's an exclamation. My kids come up to me all the time, it seems like every day, with something in their hand. Maybe it's a rock or a bug, or it's something they drew, and they're like, look, look, Dad. And whatever it is way more important than whatever I have going on, right? It's always the most important thing. But that's the heart behind this word. There is something that we need to behold. There's something we need to look at that is more deserving of our attention. And it's Jesus Christ as the Lamb of God. That title itself, the Lamb of God, we could trace through the Old Testament all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. But if you just think about the Exodus, you remember the night before the Exodus, before Israel left Egypt, God had the Israelites sacrifice a lamb, an innocent, blameless lamb, and take the blood from that lamb and put it on their doorposts of their house, on their entryway of their homes, so that when the angel of God, when God's wrath started to work his way through Egypt that night, he would see the blood on their doorposts, and they would be protected, and he would pass over them, and they would be protected from God's wrath. That event is just a shadow of the real thing, the ultimate Passover lamb, Jesus Christ, who was sacrificed on Passover, by the way. Who would take the wrath that we deserve for us, a substitutionary sacrifice, so that when we put our faith in him, his blood covers us and God's wrath passes over us. What an amazing thing, huh? When you really behold what he's done for us. Reminds me of a story. Well, with all the fires that we've had in our area lately, it reminds me of a story of a fire down. It was in 1994, Glenwood Springs, Colorado, Storm King Mountain, the South Canyon Fire. Lightning strike sparked a little fire, just a small blaze, and they sent some hotshot crews to go tackle it. And they had it contained within like 50 acres. It was contained. They were set up. They were ready to stop it. But then a wind gust, a cold front came through and turned that thing into a monster with flames 150 foot high. They were trapped. They didn't know what to do. They had seconds to respond to the flare-up. And some of them, they pulled out their emergency shelters. You know, these little aluminum foil blankets, basically. And some of them chose to hide under their blankets, their shelters. Some, however, decided to just book it and run right through the wall of fire into the ground that was already burned. And one of the firefighters reported in the USA Today, he said, the guys who used their shelters died, but those who ran back into and through the wall of fire to the ground that was already burned lived. And I see in that story two approaches that mankind generally takes to the wrath of God. We're all sinners. We all deserve it. I think we know that. And some of us, some will try to take shelter. They'll try to hide behind the shelter of their man-made works, their good works, their religious works, trying to be good enough, trying to be better than the next guy, you know, going to church, that sort of thing. And they're going to find it incredibly insufficient when the judgment day comes. The approach that we need to take needs to be more like those other firefighters who run through the flame to the ground that was already burned at the cross of Jesus Christ. That's the good news of Good Friday. That he took the wrath that we deserve so that we can stand where the fire has already burned. And it won't burn again. So that we can be forgiven. We can be set free. We can be shown that incredible mercy and grace we do not deserve. And so as we continue tonight, let's just continue in worship to continue to behold this Lamb of God in our hearts. Whether that means standing up and singing, or that means just, you know, putting your hands over your face and just crying out to him. Let's continue to behold our God.